Greetings.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
I wasn't sure if it was on my end or not because I'd call and it wouldn't ring.
All right.
Off,
yeah, mine, because my PC had sort of frozen. It hadn't actually crashed, but I've been burning some DVDs and it had screwed up, so it was still kind of running, its spinning its wheels, so it might have not been able to properly answer the call.
Yeah, it was strange.
Because
earlier when I tried it, it did ring.
Yeah, I was away though. I was in the next room and I didn't hear it going, so.
Yeah. Well, I provided a link there to a collection of Fetzer's talk shows.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of like from his parent directory. Instead of having to go through his blog to get them, I just went to where he stored his media.
Right.
And I was listening to any number of his shows. Did you look at that link at all? It's the second link I gave.
Okay, yeah, I've just clicked on it now. I didn't see you'd posted that link. I did see the second one, which was the Media Watch thing.
Yeah, that's some guys from Press TV. Like,
yeah.
You knew that Blakeney guy, eh?
Yeah. He's known to us. Yeah, in a way. I've not met him personally, but we knew that he was doing stuff.
Yeah. Well, they're a very strange bunch, but... Mm. Last time I talked to you was right around the new year,
mm-hmm.
and I had told you then that over Christmas I had downloaded a bunch of radio shows and kind of sit back listening to them, etc.
Yeah.
And I'd heard that Dr. Carly bitching about Judy Wood being on Jesse Ventura's conspiracy show.
Yeah, I think we talked about that, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and you got busy putting Christmas stuff away, and I called your friend there that listened to
me. Oh, that's right, Jonathan, that's right, yes. He was quite surprised to get a call from you.
I think we made each other's day.
I think we think you did, yeah.
But anyway, you were busy, and I let you go, and I told you I was researching Nazis big time.
Yes, yeah.
So anyway, I've been quite busy doing day things, but
yeah.
Anyway, why I contacted you on the weekend is I wanted to give you a heads up that I was about to pounce on Fetzer.
Yeah.
So I was baiting him on Friday night, and I put you in the BCC line.
Right.
First thing I did was send an email to him and the Nazis, and then I upped it with an email with some PDF files, and then I pounced on them with the war in Iraq kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Fetzer, like, I basically dismissed him in spring of 2005 as an
idiot. Sure.
And the only reason he even come under my radar again at all was, you know, I think when you mentioned him to me, I think in a conversation in early 2010.
Yeah.
Like when the only conversation I had with you in 2009 before in the woods, I didn't know anything about you being hooked up with Judy Wood or Hutchinson or whatever. You kind of enlightened me in the conversation. I had to listen to the conversation again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then when you and I were talking in the spring of 2010, that's when I was taking on a lot of people about the war in Iraq. I was taking on the police commissions, the military police commissions, etc. That's when Julian Assange contacted me. That's when I started talking to Brigitte Johnstadter, etc. That's quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Fetzer, from what you had told me, you know, he had enlisted you out of the blue for the scholars or whatever.
That's right.
And then he turned into a backstabber. And that didn't surprise me. None of it surprises me.
No, well, you already were familiar with him, and I wasn't, so yeah.
Yeah, so none of that surprised me.
No.
And the 9/11 truther movement isn't much of an issue to me because I've got enough on my plate, and Judy Wood comes as close to anyone as my opinion of it. But I found it interesting in those media files, that list of media files that What's-His-Face offers, Fetzer offers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy named Curtis. He doesn't offer his real name.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one file called Nikola Tesla. And then there's a couple other files called Curtis and Bush. Stuff like that.
But anyway, right.
That Curtis guy, like, what he was saying to Fetzer, I think it was like last year. There's no particular date with that conversation.
Yeah, I think it might have been a couple of years ago, actually. But yeah, I vaguely remember this guy. But yeah.
Oh, but like, he was sounding a lot like me, and I could tell that he was accessing the same files as I'd got before 9/11 from KeeleyNet.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, I'm a bit of a Tesla buff.
Yeah, we've talked about that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the big tell was when he did at least one show with Fetzer about Hitler being a guy named William Coates. Did you ever listen to that show?
Don't think so.
Well, it's there on the roster.
Right, yep. Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I heard him talking, I was laughing because this was way back in my memory, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it was back in late 90s, 2000, before 9/11, before I was suing anybody, when I was surfing the net and a fan of KeeleyNet, so to speak.
Yeah.
Now, I can't say where I got it, but I got it. I remember looking at all those pictures that he's talking about. Now, whether I got it from KeeleyNet or not, I just can't recall.
Yeah.
But basically, there was this big-ass bodyguard of Hitler who was dying in Florida in the late 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a monster of a man, and he's well known to history. You know, you can see him standing beside Hitler in any number of pictures.
I see.
So this was an interesting story because the guy provided all kinds of pictures. Okay?
Yeah.
And this was like a wicked interesting story, but you can listen to Curtis explain it, but I'll just tell you what Dave recalls of it.
Okay.
So anyway, this guy down in Florida, he was dating a girl, and I believe he even broke up with her. But kind of like me and my former mother-in-law, we were still friends, even though I wasn't dating her daughter no more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, this old guy asked to see this young fella in the hospital because he didn't have any male heirs, and the girls wouldn't understand, you know what I mean? And he just wanted to have a guy-to-guy one-on-one before he left this old world, right?
Right.
So anyway, he gave this young fella basically a shoebox full of old photographs.
Hmm.
And told the young fella some stories before he kicked the bucket. Okay? And basically he was saying he was Hitler's bodyguard. Hitler had lived on after World War II and actually had moved to the United States under Operation Paperclip.
Mm.
And he had pictures of him and Hitler in their old age. And there was a picture of Hitler and a bunch of people. I remember one picture where I remember looking at it hard because it was a profile of an old man.
Mm.
But they say you could tell him by his profile. Apparently, there was something unusual about his ear. I don't know what it was, but you could identify him by his ear.
Hitler. Or the bodyguard?
The Hitler.
Right.
Yeah, the bodyguard, there was no mistaking him because he was so big.
Yeah.
But anyway, this kid is a kid. Like, you know, he's like, in the late 90s, I would say he was in his 30s, right?
Yeah.
And most people, they don't know history, especially Americans.
Yeah, true.
He didn't have the first clue was what this old man was telling him, right?
Right.
But he decided to put it out there because he felt threatened in some way. And he was offering these pictures to the world, and people could make out of them what they will. And he just sort of repeated some of the stories the old fella told him.
Yeah.
So it was just an interesting read and to look at photographs and, you know, what's true, what's not true. You know, is that a picture of UFO? Isn't it? You know, that kind of thing,
yeah.
Right? So I just found that all interesting, but not that I believed it or didn't believe it. It was just interesting.
Yeah.
Right? And it wasn't something you'd see in the ordinary newspaper. But I do remember that file, and whether I saved it or not, I don't know. But anyway, all these years later, that resurfaces in this conversation with Fetzer, and apparently this Curtis guy has come across it. This Curtis guy, he's like ex-military flyer, student of Tesla, supposed to be a smart guy.
Yeah.
And he's explaining why the towers went down because of Tesla concoctions. In fact, he sounds as close to me as anyone because I'm basing what I study from KeeleyNet and Lieutenant Colonel Bearden and scalar waves and Tesla and everything like. And basically, he was taking the same logic that he'd read somewhere, and I bet you it was KeeleyNet, but he says he got it from books and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But he was presenting to Fetzer the same argument that I put to you in 2009, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing you were associated with Judy Wood, but I said Judy Wood is the closest to it. But I found Judy Wood far more valuable than anyone else because she made me aware of, you know, that big pole just going poof, right?
Right, yeah.
Or the car motor's missing, or good questions like, where's mm-hmm. all the urinals and stuff like that. So I applauded her efforts and your support of her and didn't want to impede her progress in any way, shape, or form. You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah.
And we're all entitled to our opinions, but the best part about Judy Wood is she does not make any claims as to who done it or why. Right? She's not saying it's the Son of Sam or the Nazis or the Zionists or an inside job. All she's doing is looking at the evidence and asking the elementary question.
That's what right.
What happened? Right? You know what I mean?
Yep.
And as you listen to any number of these talk shows, and I've listened to several that she's been on, I can see her, I've watched some YouTubes of her and stuff, I can see her get pissed and pissed and more pissed because people want her to go to the next step and say, who done it and why?
Yep.
And she keeps getting indignant with them, right? So anyway, and I can understand her indignation, like enough's enough. To ask the question, where do the towers go, and present some interesting things, like I just mentioned, is enough.
Yep.
You know what I mean? If she elaborates, then it's just clear speculation, because none of us were there.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And we don't have privy to what Dick Cheney's got privy to. Like, you know what I mean? You know, it's just bullshit, right?
Yep.
Unless you have the evidence. And I can come back at anyone and simply say, with my matters, right?
Yep.
Where did the Senate Begging Committee hearing go? Where's the transcript and where's the webcast? It was once there and now it's not. And
yep.
That's enough, right? Now
yep.
I have the evidence to support why it upsets me, right? I'm like kind of like one of the guys that survived the tower. I'm the guy that survived the economic collapse at my expense. You know what I mean? But, you know what I mean? And nobody believes me, so I understand her frustration, right?
Yeah.
All that said, Fetzer has appeared to have had a falling out with his other buddy there. What's his name? The guy that was co-chair of that scholars thing. What was his name?
Jones.
Oh, yeah. Apparently they got in a big spit, too. Did you know that?
Oh, I know all about that, yeah. Yeah, I documented some of that.
Well, I didn't. See, I don't pay attention to that stuff, right? But anyway, so Fetzer has moved on from thermite to mini-nukes done it now.
Well, yeah, yeah. Right?
However, in his conversations with various people in some of those shows, he's almost speaking verbatim Judy Wood's words.
Yeah.
Have you listened to them?
Well, I mean, this is my area of expertise, really, because I've, this is how they're operating the cover-up. They're doing it to give you a summary of what's happened is Fetzer is over time I've realized he is far more closely connected to the people that are running the planet than I realized. Basically, I was very naive going into the scholars group, and then I realized that he was, that was part of the cover-up, and I was involved in the cover-up. So I then came out of that, and I started to speak out about what he was doing. And in the first part of that, I even interacted with him. And I actually documented of what this Jones character was doing to some extent. And Fetzer actually read and reviewed that, and he didn't. He actually asked for some small changes to what I'd written, which I did, because I assumed at that time that he was a good guy. So what they'd done is Fetzer and Jones had made some sort of arrangement, and they'd obviously set it up that that group would be broken up, and any interested folks that came into that group would then become disaffected. So that was a honeypot that they were then going to tip the honey out of, and all the bees would be fly to different parts of the, field or whatever. That was all set up. And they knew, they knew that Judy Wood was going to find the answer to 9/11 and the World Trade Center before she did. They knew that. And that is demonstrated in a number of small ways that we've realized, one of which was that in 2007, they tested her. Fetzer tested how much Judy Wood knew in 2007, because he said to her at an event when they were discussing privately the research, do you think 9/11 was a cold fusion event? So he was testing at that point whether Judy had made the connection between what happened on 9/11 and cold fusion, which is intimately connected to how the towers were destroyed. And I think that can be scientifically proved. And the information about that is in Judy Wood's book and in the videos we've done. So those facts, when you look at them, you can see not only is Fetzer connected to those that did 9/11, they knew that somebody was going to find out what happened. And that someone is Judy Wood. It's all very well for these people to talk about Tesla and, Curtis, whoever he is. But that's part of the muddle-up. Fetzer now, what he's done is he's done the thermite, he's done a bit on Judy Wood, he had Judy Wood under his control for about 2 years, and then he's realized he can't control that information anymore, so he's got to go to the nuke position and give that credibility to help cover up the Judy Wood research, because that's now gained a lot of ground. And it appears, from my experience, that they're not allowed to stop this coming out. They have to let this come out. There's something going on that they have to let it come out, because, as you and I both know, we've had this book published ourselves, and they could have stopped that at any time. They could have done I've discussed this with Judy, they could have done a number of things to stop this book being published, but they haven't. So that's my understanding of it. Judy Wood is 100% right. What she said is of vast and huge importance to the human race, which is why, you know, I'm continuing to try and deal with it. But having said that, the forces that we're up against are the same ones that you're up against, and they are have immense power and influence.
Yeah.
Against which there is little that I feel I can do personally.
Yeah.
But before I go, just let me finish this bit. And it again, what you know, what struck me when you sent me these messages today and yesterday about Fetzer is, yes, that this connection to Canada, again, you know, which we've spoken of before all of this, and there's also this connection to Iran as well, which is rather strange.
It's like, I don't want to begin to sound anti-Semitic, but I am anti-Zionist.
Yes, me too.
This, as you've heard me say before, it's like the crazy bastards want to bring Armageddon to make their books come true.
Right.
Fetzer, never forget, was a former Marine officer.
Exactly.
And then he was thinking about becoming a lawyer and became a professor. Right?
That I did not know. I knew he became a professor, but I didn't know he was thinking about becoming a lawyer.
He's very much a snob, and it matters how many PhDs you got and where you got them. And
he's a credentialist, yes, indeed. He did that with me. He actually, when he had me as a guest, he announced to the audience I have 2 degrees, which was untrue. I have a joint degree.
He's an incredible snob, even yes. To the point that he has to brag that he uses a Mac.
Yes.
But, he is a front guy, like a shill, okay?
Yes.
I don't know how to put it, but if you read the email I sent him just now,
mm-hmm.
I'm baiting him, okay? And if you'd read the email I sent to him in 2005, right? And it's all there in this email right now. And I published it in another guy's blog. And perhaps you can make a PDF and put it in my records or whatever. But, and when I crossed paths with him in 2004, it was because of his concerns about Paul Wellstone's demise.
Yeah.
And he had just apparently come out with a book or whatever, but I discovered him on the internet, and I picked up the phone and called him. And it's all there in the email. When I emailed him, told him my phone number, he said he tried to call me back. I said, call this day. I called that guy. I said, I'm going out. It's all there in that email I sent you, right?
Yeah.
And then he and I did talk early January, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I sent him some emails, and it was done, right? But now, at the time, I'm trying to stay out of jail. Like, this is 2005. Bush is going into his second term. You know what I mean? They're trying to sell our houses. They're trying to throw me back in jail and fight. I'm very busy, right?
Mm.
In fact, when I was talking to him, I was very busy with Byron Pryor writing his defense and counterclaim.
Sure.
And three motions for me in another court, right?
Absolutely.
And this guy did not take my tip about Wellstone.
Yeah, you see, his job was to help keep that covered up so that nobody found out the truth.
Yeah.
Same as with the Kennedy assassination and 9/11. That's what Fetzer's job is. It's the same for all three.
Yeah, but now, see, I didn't know about him and JFK. I read this stuff about Wellstone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing about it was his location. His location. See, he was in Minnesota, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 2004, I had sent a lawyer to meet another lawyer in Minnesota. Barry Bachrach, right?
Right.
Who was my friend and represent my wife's interests, who I give us wiretap tapes, to meet Colleen Raleigh, who was whistleblower of the year in 2002. She was an FBI lawyer that took on Mueller because they wouldn't go into the computer for Massali, right?
Mm.
And I'd been talking to Colleen Raleigh before I talked to or met Bachrach. And then when Bachrach asked for my help with Indian matters and in return was willing to help me with my wife's matter, right? He was going to Minneapolis to file a lawsuit to sue a man named Paul Devane, because he ran a newspaper, Indian News, Indian Country News or whatever, and he was putting down his client, Leonard Peltier, so he was suing him for slander. And I said, you're going to Minneapolis. I got all these emails. You know, I know you believe me anyway. I said, you're going to Minneapolis? He goes, yeah. I said, perhaps I should introduce you to a lawyer. And he said, who's that? I said, Colleen Raleigh. And because the FBI do not have an office in South Dakota, and they don't even have a big federal court, so he was able to sue Demaine, even though he was from South Dakota, in Minneapolis, right? So anyway, I said, you should go meet Colleen Raleigh. She's in the FBI in Minneapolis. And he said, oh, that's the same place where David Price is, the killer of Anna May, the FBI agent that killed Anna May. And I said, well, Raleigh seems to be ethical, and she's a lawyer and an FBI agent and whistleblower of the year. I said, take some wiretap tapes and give them to her. She already knows who I am, and introduce yourself, right? And he did. He went there, and he met Colleen Raleigh, and he come back. And he was telling me that Colleen Raleigh wasn't going to do anything with our stuff. She was quitting the FBI, and then she was going to run for public office, and then she could be of service to her. I said, no, she's more important right now as an FBI agent inside the Justice Department and a lawyer, and recognized. What power does she have when she's outside of the FBI and looking for a seat in Congress? Like, right now is when we need her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the trials were going on and stuff like that. So anyway, things kind of smelled funny, right? Anyway, I went home to Canada back and ran for parliament. Bachrach failed out on me. But before I went home to Canada, when he filed this lawsuit for slander, the minimum you can ask for in federal court is $75,000. And Demaine had the newspaper, and his slander was published, and he was liable, and he's screwed, right? Because Bachrach's from a big firm. They got like 400 lawyers in his firm, right? And Paul Demaine don't have enough money to argue Bachrach. So anyway, they settled for $75,000 in an apology rather than go through litigation. Well, just as soon as that happened, Demaine reneged on the settlement, and Bachrach was pissed. So anyway, this is early 2004. This is before Fetzer come out with his book about Wellstone. Because you understand that fucking Fetzer is hooked up with all these Indians, too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's buddy-buddy. He runs around with, like, Robert Redford, who worries about the Indians. Everybody worries about everything. They're all in this, they all jump from one mud puddle to another. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's the same players. Like, I've looked at Fetzer recently.
That's right. I mean, that's what I've realized. What I was saying.
But I knew he was involved with Indians in 2004. Okay?
Right.
Because these guys write a lot, they brag a lot, they talk a lot, you know what I mean? And when I was researching other things, I bumped into him about Indians and then followed him into Wellstone.
Yeah.
You understand? So anyway, because he's a college professor and, you know, Minnesota, South Dakota, you know, like, that's the boondocks for colleges, you understand? And anyway, they got these kids and Indians running around, and anyway, he's in the thick of her. And never forget, there's huge war between the U.S. Justice Department and the American Indian movement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, so of course they're going to have the shills in the middle of it. You know what I mean? Of course, right?
Right.
And what better place is a professor who seems hard left wing, right, to help college students bend their mind as actually he's controlling them. You understand?
Yeah, that's right. That's what he's doing. That's exactly what he's – but he's able to do it with lots of people.
Oh, yeah. They do it everywhere.
Well, I mean, I just – because what Fetz has done is he's actually – he's actually been able to influence somebody that I know. He's written an email for them and got them to send it as if they've written it.
Well,
that's the level to which he's able to influence people.
I'm sitting in a college town.
Right.
And I mean, you look at Lethbridge and you look at that, you must have heard of Anthony Hall.
Anthony Hall.
He's the other guy in Press TV with that Blakey guy.
No, not. I haven't really watched Press TV much. I've watched a couple of things.
Oh, well, no. Click on that link I provided. You said you read it about Blakeney.
All right. Blakeney, it's on there, is he?
Blakeney is Anthony Hall's number one student.
Right.
Anthony Hall is the professor in Lethbridge. Now,
right.
For instance, when Split in the Sky tried to arrest Bush when he came to Calgary, Anthony Hall... He's on Press TV with that Blakeney guy, right?
Right.
They're the ones that brought that, like, George Galloway to Canada to try to testify, and the government stopped him from entering, and that Cynthia McKinley, and that's all had to do with splitting the guy's trial, right?
Right.
Now, as I say these names, scroll down through Fetzer media files, and you'll see Split in the Sky,
yeah.
Blakeney,
yeah.
Anthony Hall. You see how they're all running together in the same circles?
Oh, yeah.
Just look at the media file and see the various conversations. Now, another one that was particularly interesting, it's kind of like alphabetical. I'll see if I can find it here. He calls himself Dangerous Dan. I think Dangerous Dan Marvin. Okay? Now, when right. I saw that one, I died laughing. Right? Now, Barry Bachrach, okay? Back to that lawyer again?
Yeah.
Back 2006, January 2006, he'd stabbed me on the back for the last time. I was sick and tired of it. He conned my wife into forging my signature and documents, all kinds of shit, right?
Yeah.
And he was bragging, like, because he thought I was fucked, right?
Yeah.
2006, and he was bragging like he was supposed to go to court and act on behalf of my wife.
Yeah.
And he didn't go. He had to go again to South Carolina, which was this was constantly upsetting my wife. Like, she cried for days over this shit. He's like, he kept going to South Carolina, kept going to South Carolina. So in January, when he was supposed to be going to court for my wife again, he's going to South Carolina again. And apparently that's when my wife buckled and stabbed me in the back with him. He said, you can't win, sign, you know, or, you know, take what you can get, move on with your life kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then once the deal was done and I was fucked, he sent me an email bragging that when he was down in South Carolina, he was fighting in federal court for that Dangerous Dan Marvin.
Yeah.
And Dangerous Dan Marvin... was U.S. Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel and a professional killer for the CIA who had been enlisted to kill the doctor in Bethesda who had the photographs of JFK's real autopsy.
Yeah.
So here's what's-his-face there, Fetzer talking to him, a couple ex-military guys talking to Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Special Forces, Green Beret. And I never forget Lieutenant Colonel Ward Dean that I knew is still in federal prison because he fought the tax man, right? You know, like, I run into a lot of these military guys too, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, this Dan Marvin had written books about the JFK assassination and the dirty deeds he'd done for as a patriot, come to find out that he wasn't, and then Even I remember Dangerous Dan. I remember something about him going to Canada and bringing an ex-general of the Viet Cong across the border, and the border guards didn't dare fuck with the ex-general of the Viet Cong because Dangerous Dan was with him. Anyway. All that said, right? As soon as they're at the lieutenant colonel, fuck them, right? It's the guys in the mud that do the dirty deeds.
Yeah.
not the officers, right?
Yeah.
But the officers get all the glory. But anyway, that said, Bachrach sends me this bragging, and there was like newspaper articles about the victory amongst the various military reporter guys. And never forget, Fetzer writes for Veterans Today or something, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? So anyway, they're bragging, and I'm so pissed because, like, I've lost my wife and kids, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I pick up the phone and I call this Dangerous fucking Dan. and I invented in words, you know what I mean? I said, "You're Dangerous Dan Marvin, the tough guy, eh?" This old bastard, right? He's going, "Yeah." I said, "David Amos, you ever fucking hear of me?" You know what I mean? No. And I said, "Well, we got one thing in common." He goes, "What's that?" I said, "The lawyer, Barry Bachrach." He said, "How do you know Bachrach?" I said, "Because while he was down in South Carolina winning your case for you, he was losing my wife's in fucking Boston. What makes you so fucking important?" You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I said, he's going, "Who the fuck are you?" I said, "One fucking pissed off asshole is what I am." Huh? And I said, "How much do you owe Bachrach?" You know what Bachrach charged them?
No.
$250,000.
Jeez.
A friend of mine paid that in a divorce settlement trying to keep her kid. The woman had to pay $250,000 legal fees. Anyway, if you've got lots of money, the lawyers will spend lots of time. The only problem was Marvin didn't have any money. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He was crying for money, so Bachrach billed him, but he isn't necessarily going to get paid. You understand?
Yeah.
But anyway, I said, "Let me ask you one question." He said, "What's that?" I said, "Did you approach Bachrach, or did he approach you?" He said, "He came to me."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Yeah, that's exactly the same thing that happened to me." But for some reason, the government let Dangerous Dan win. It was the government taking Dan to court, trying to shut him up about this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you say, they want some things out and some things they don't, right?
Apparently, yeah.
So anyway, all these years later, Bachrach, back in 2004 and everything, like, he wouldn't come to court because he said he was getting threats from the FBI, and he knew a lot about the Indians. He was telling me how the FBI are involved in various murders and stuff. He told me all kinds of stuff, and I helped him as best I could. When Paul DeMaine wouldn't pay him, I attacked all of Paul DeMaine's friends and lawyers, and Russell Means, private detective, and Paul DeMaine had a change of heart and settled and paid the $75,000, right?
Right.
Just because, like, I was all over it and doing this, that, the other thing. But anyway, Barry says, "How can I help you?" Right? And I said, "Well, why don't you help another Indian kid? Because Indians are under federal jurisdiction."
Right.
So anytime an Indian is prosecuted, for jaywalking,
yeah,
you go to federal prison. You understand? Because they're under federal, that's why the FBI go on Indian lands. They're on reservations. Right? And Indians, like, across border Canada, the United States, they're aboriginals. You understand?
Yeah.
But anyway, they're under federal jurisdiction. So anyway, there was this poor teenage kid, and then I heard this Fetzer talking to somebody else about the Bushes and about their compound up in Kennebunkport. I think it was I think it was that Curtis guy again.
Yeah. That's a name that's familiar to me. That's a funny name, yeah. Kenny Monkporter, yeah.
Yeah, and anyway, they were saying, like, you know, Bush was really the son. I remember that bullshit from years ago, really being the son of Tesla's accountant. And about him deliberately crashing his PBY in the Pacific and his two crews because his crew were wise to him. And anyway, but these guys got to get their facts straight. Like, how could Bush be in the South Pacific and he's only a kid, right? And the next time be like way over in the fuck Kenny Bunkport meeting a fucking submarine. You know, like, these people are a lot of bullshit artists, right? But I'll tell you a lot. I know one thing I know about Kenny Bunkport because I did it and took the pictures. And it was such a cold day that I have a picture of the exhaust coming out of a truck that was running and a big icicle from the exhaust pipe right to the ground. You know, the condensed air.
Wow.
The moisture of the pipe was freezing.
It is cold.
Huge. Yeah, and I was up in Maine. So anyway, what it was this poor kid and his friend and it was during the winter. And a lot of these summer places along the coast, right? So they break into boathouses to see what they can steal.
Yeah.
Right? So anyway, they're in this particular boathouse and stole some shit. Well, Jesus Christ, it belonged to George H.W. Bush. Right? It was his fucking boathouse, right? And they had security cameras inside the boathouse. So they knew who done it because they had got, you know, and the Secret Service had the Bush's property, right? So they had the kid cold. So there they are on TV seeking help because this kid who was just like a teenager who had broken into a boathouse to see what he would steal was going off to federal prison. You do not want a 16-year-old to go to federal prison with these hardened criminals.
No.
Especially if you're a mother. Right?
Right.
And what did he do? He broke into a boathouse. Big deal. If it had been anybody else's boathouse, he would have got a slap. But because it was Bush's, they're sending him to federal prison. Like he was, you know, it's a breach of natural security. Except, you know what I mean? Right?
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I said, help this kid. I said, I already went up and I served his stepfather, the lawyer who ain't doing nothing for his wife. And I even called the wife and explained it to her. Right?
Yeah.
I said, you're the big ass lawyer with the big ass law firm. The kid's an Indian. You're Leonard Peltier's lawyer. Make a big to do out of it. Embarrass the bastard so they don't send the kid to prison. There's it?
Yeah.
Because he's the one with the access to the media. He's the one that can get to the fucking microphones and stuff, right? He didn't do a fucking thing. That kid went to prison. But I got the email to him. He said, now how can I help you? When I helped him get that 75 grand, he said, how can I help you? I said, here, help this kid, right? Because I'd done all that I could about it, you know what I mean? So anyway, that said, years and years later, Bachrach, because of what he did with my wife and I declared war on him and his law firm, and he got kicked out of his law firm, and he was a full partner. And now he's kind of operating out of his house, and his wife, Rhonda's a lawyer too, and he's picking up what work he can, right?
Yeah.
But last year, I discovered, because this woman from out west sent me stuff, and she was in a big argument with Bachrach, and she sent me his new email address, etc., because I didn't know it, right?
Yeah.
And I started looking at what he was up to these days, because he was in a war with this woman, right? And her name was Suzanne Dupre. I don't know how she heard about me, but she did. Anyway, I think she must have Googled Barry Bachrach and bumped into my stuff. Anyway, that said, come to find out, Bachrach now works with the FBI agents he was calling names of years ago.
Yeah.
He just totally flipped, turned coat.
Yeah.
And I've got actually a video by Paul DeMaine, Remember he sued Paul Demain for libel?
Right.
Now he's Paul Demain's best buddy. And Paul Demain and him have, they make these movies and you got to pay to watch them for fuck's sake. And I got a YouTube of Barry Bacharach talking about how he was bamboozled by the Indians and now he knows the truth. What a bunch of bullshit. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But, you know, I guess that's my Jim Fetzer, right?
Right.
But anyway, as you look at Fetzer's list there, I see an incredible number of people I recognize.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's you know, information gathering all the time.
Yeah, it's like a big circle jerk.
Yeah.
And him and Maggie Rodden and Dangerous Dan Marvin and that Blakely kid and Anthony Hall. And there's two things there about Judy Wood. If you just type Wood, you know, like do a text search there. There's two particular shows that I bumped into about Judy Wood.
Yeah.
And in both of them, they're bitching about you.
There you go.
I kind of get a giggle out of that. You are a Wood devotee.
I'm a cult leader or something.
No, you were called a devotee.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then there was some woman out of Canada. What was her name?
Claire Coon, probably.
That was her. That's her. And apparently, like, she sounds like a fucking space cadet, that one. But anyway, apparently, she was friends with Judy Wood, but she tries to...
No, she's never friends with her. She exchanged a few emails, but, yeah.
She tries to straddle the fence and pacify all sides.
Right, she tries to be very nice. She tried it on with me as well, but I told her to fuck off, so...
Yeah, like, she's a, like, beyond dippy.
I haven't taken the time to listen to her. I communicated with her an email. I saw one of the PowerPoints she did, and that was enough, really. You know.
Well, why I point out this, if you click on Wood, you can hear her talking, and your name comes up.
Yeah. You know I posted, I've written all this up on my website. I know, you know, it's perhaps not your bag to read it, but it was necessary to do that because in that particular case, what happened was Fetzer invited Wood to go to the conference, the cover-up conference that he was organizing in Canada, strangely enough.
In Vancouver.
And Judy just didn't even bother to respond to the message. I mean, you heard that phone call. I think you sent me a link to that phone call that he made. And there's another story behind that, which isn't clear in that audio. It's not clear what actually happened.
One of those shows.
Yeah, it's not actually clear what actually really happened in that.
Explains he's taken it one of them radio shows that I'm pointing to.
Right. So Fetzer organized that conference and then invited her. Judy never responded. So he claimed he had to invite Claire Coon to present the research. Now I pointed out that if he'd been genuinely interested in actually reporting accurately what Wood had said, is that we'd already posted some fairly good quality videos on the internet of her lectures, which had been done in 2011. So if Fetzer was genuinely interested in presenting accurately what she had said, he could have just shown those videos. You know, if she refused to come for whatever reason. So the point is, the point of that conference, the whole point of it had no other purpose than to cover up and muddle up what Judy Wood has been presenting. That was the only purpose of that whole conference. It had no other purpose.
I heard somebody talking about going to that conference.
Yeah, it's probably, yeah, go on, I think I know it is, yeah, right, yeah.
I remember, I can't remember.
Rob was probably his name.
I can't, but there was people that went to the conference.
That's right.
And they said it was, like, nothing to write home to mama about.
Right.
But it was, like...
Because we know that guy, we know him, he lives in Vancouver, that's how come he went. So we know he, that wasn't his real name that he knows, but we know who he is. And he didn't use his real name because he was genuinely worried that they were going to come after him and try and trash his business, because he does have a business.
Yeah.
And he's from quite a well-to-do background. He's from that guy that you're referring to. I know you can't remember his name, but I'm pretty sure I know who you're talking about. And he's got quite a good, you know, he's got a sort of wealthy family and that, you know, and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, I hear Fetzer bragging that he was the organizer of it, but I didn't know that until I just listened to these shows recently.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
But I remember somebody saying that it was no big deal. Anyway, that said, back to Vancouver.
Right.
Now, if you type in Radical Press, this is one of the guys I've been fighting with since 2004. He's the guy that first his crowd all buddied up with Byron Pryor. Remember me talking to him before, and I wrote his defense counterclaim. Byron Pryor introduced me to these guys at the same time that I met Barry Bacharach in early 2004. And I asked Barry Bacharach what he thought of these guys, right? And he said, don't trust them. And I said, I'm glad you said that, because this Noam Chomsky asshole, I had been emailing with back and forth. He lived not too far from me in Boston, right? And he invited me to one of his lectures in our town, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I went, and I had sent a lawyer my stuff at the same time I'd sent it to Barry Bacharach. The lawyer was named Paul Saba. And there's fucking Chomsky on the stage with Paul Saba.
Mm-hmm.
And this was 2004. Christmas time, or no, it was not Christmas, it was after Christmas, cold, and I had a bunch of documents that I wanted to meet Chomsky in person, because we were having an amiable email exchange back and forth, and I said, I'd like to meet you in person, show you some stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and he wasn't too far away, he worked at MIT, and you know that my wife works over in Harvard Yard, eh? And so anyway, he seemed like an okay guy. So when I went to the meeting, him and that fucking Paul Saba, once they seen me, they just ran. You know what I mean? I left the documents with the lady to put on the show, and I said, give this to Chomsky with the CDM. You know what I mean? And like, he invited me, for fuck's sake. You understand? So I'm going, what a fucking asshole, right? So within a few weeks or months, I don't know, it wasn't very long, I'm looking and I'm getting set to go home, and I see that this Noam Chomsky, who wouldn't come across the room to shake my hand, flies all the way to British Columbia to bump bellies with John Graham and all these lawyers that are trying to keep him in Canada over these same trials that I'm investigating for Barry Bacharach. Because if Arlo Wolfenclaw is found guilty, they'll summons John Graham out of Canada for the trial of Anna May and her murder. And I'm going, Jesus Christ, does Canada have any sovereignty at all? We're talking about a person from a sovereign nation within a sovereign nation who's being charged of the murder of another person from a sovereign nation within a sovereign nation, and yet they want to bring him down to the United States. Why don't we try our own people in our own courts? That's my thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's charged for, a Canadian Indian is charged with killing a Canadian Indian. Shouldn't we try him? And then the problem was, 35 years before, the same FBI, the same Justice Department, had filed fraudulent affidavits with the Solicitor General and the Attorney General of Canada 35 years ago, and fraudulently, with false affidavits, had Leonard Peltier extradited from Canada, and he's been in prison for 37 years, illegally.
Yeah.
And Canada was going to do the same thing again with our own people this time.
Yeah.
And I said, do we got any sovereignty at all? Right?
Yeah.
The Yankees ask, can we give up our people? You know what I mean? Right? So anyway, all that said, here's this Noam Chomsky. He flies all the way to Vancouver. We're back to Vancouver again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's the leader of the Action Party, which is this crooked lawyer, Connie Fogel.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Just take the Action Party from Paul Hillier. And he's, you know, the guy that used to start the Action Party. He's the guy that worries about UFOs, et cetera, et cetera. But
yeah, yeah. Well, I think Connie Fogel was involved with that Vancouver conference as well, the 9/11 conference, I think.
With she's Fester. A huge crook.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a huge
so I think she was involved with Fester in that conference. I think I might be getting mixed up with something else, but.
Well, she's all buddy. She runs around with, like, Kevin Annette. And like, she took over the Action Party and destroyed it.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Paul Hillier had founded it, right? Anyway,
right.
Chomsky goes out there and he meets this Liberty guy and Connie Fogel and all of them. And I see that, I'm just livid. So I say this to Bachrach. I said, what do you think of this Noam Chomsky asshole? Right? And I said, I'm going to send a letter to, you know, Minister of Indian Affairs. And I said, I'm going home for Parliament. And I'm going to raise a lot of hell about this Indian shit. I said, mind if I put your name in these documents? And he said, go ahead. He said, Kopsky's a member of the fake left.
Yeah.
Right? So anyway, when I was up home, I got in huge battles. Picked a huge fight with the Action Party before I went, and then kept the fight going on. Although Connie Fogel's telling everybody in the Action Party, ignore me, I'm a Fed. And I got huge battle with women, other guys, cops, and all kinds of shit. And then I polished it off by sending a letter to Connie Fogel and the Minister of Indian Affairs, delivered in hand, right? And then made it a point to run against the Minister of Indian Affairs in the next election. All the hell back, right? Right?
Yeah.
And I even had Bachrach calling Connie Fogel and emailing her and sending me the copies. It was too funny, right? This is like 2004, 2005, right?
Yeah.
Now, all these years later, and we're talking like that's got to be 8, 9 years ago, here's this Fetcher ass Earl bumping bellies with all of these same people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In Vancouver. Now, if you type in Radical Press, that is where a lot of them spout the rhetoric in the Radical Press.
Yeah. And
Arthur Topham, just this weekend, he announced that his lawyer, Doug Christie, has got liver cancer.
Right.
Doug Christie, have you ever heard of Ernst Zundel?
I have heard the name, yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, we're back to, I remember you telling me a story about going to Wales at the end of a train stop, and then the guy wanted his picture, and you saw David Duke, right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't Wales, but yeah, it was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whatever, yeah. But anyway, this all hooks in, buddy. Big time. Because if you look at Radical Press, and Ernst Zundel. Now, Ernst Zundel, don't misunderstand me. I believe in free speech.
Right.
And if Ernst Zundel wants to research how many people actually died in the concentration camps or whatever, that's fine. I see no harm. Right?
Yeah.
And it's the argument. I'm against hate speech, as anybody would, right? But that's not hate speech, right? And he has a right to publish his opinions and da-da-da-da-da, mind his manners, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, Ernst Zundel should not play Canadians as suckers.
Right.
Now, I had the same problem with my friend Werner Bach. Like, it's you that opted to move here and live amongst us. You've got to learn to accommodate your new neighbors rather than you make them accommodate you. And it doesn't help your argument going around calling us all stupid. It's you decided to move against with us. You must accommodate our ways. You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah.
And to run around and criticize us, you're not making any friends. You know what I mean? But when you take it a step farther and start praising Hitler to a lot of people that lost a lot of relatives, etc., fighting your forefathers, that's not wise. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just not wise, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that said, that's what these people do. Not necessarily Ernst Zundel, but his fan club.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ernst Zundel, as smart as he may think he is, when he was a young fella, tried to be Prime Minister of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
When Lester Pearson, I didn't know this. I listened to Jim Fetzer talk to Ernst Zundel. Ernst Zundel, when he come out of prison, he was in prison in Germany for 5 years, and he's been on probation ever since, right?
Mm.
If you listen to any show at all in that roster, listen to Jim Fetzer talk to Ernst Zundel, because Ernst Zundel, he says, and he got out of prison, he's been on probation stuff, he would only talk to Jim Fetzer.
How interesting.
In the fucking world.
Mm.
Listen to the show. Anyway, that said, I listened to the show and it was educational for me. Okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because I don't pretend to know Ernst Zundel's affairs. I see what I see in the newspapers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually heard the man speak recently with the show with Fetzer, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I don't believe everything he says, right? Because I know what I know from being here, right?
Yeah.
But it was nevertheless interesting. But one of the things Ernst Zundel educated me on was in the late 60s, and he'd moved over here, and he was in his 20s and met a French lady, had kids, and he was quite successful, and he was young fellow, and he was in college, and he was doing this, that, and the other thing. Mm. Anyway, Lester Pierce, the Prime Minister of Canada, came down with cancer, and he was dying.
Yeah.
So they decided to have a leadership race. So there was about 20 candidates to be the Liberal leader, because whoever became the Liberal leader automatically becomes Prime Minister, because Pearson was Prime Minister at the time.
Yeah.
So, who doesn't want to be Prime Minister? You don't even have to get elected. You know what I mean? Right? Right? Just get in the good side of the lip. So, whoever is going to be the next Liberal leader is going to be the President. And it turned out to be Pierre Elliott Trudeau. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But, Ernst Zundel enters as a candidate, the Liberal leader, to become Prime Minister of Canada. He's not even a Canadian citizen. There's no right. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If he's so goddamn smart, like, why would he do such a thing?
Yeah.
So anyway, he got all the way to the last 7 on the day they were picking and the votes, and he got to speak on the first thing, and then he got cute and withdrew. Because he knew if the light shone too brightly on him, they'd figure out that he wasn't a citizen.
Yeah.
He's practicing some fraud. You know what I mean? So anyway, he withdrew. He brags of this to Fetzer. Right?
Yeah.
And he said that the reason he was running was to shine a light on all the plight of his fellow German immigrants. Key word, immigrants.
Mm.
If you don't like it in Canada, go home. Things were pretty tough in Germany back then, right?
Yeah.
Right? But anyway, he was bitching that after that happened, the Canadian government wouldn't give him citizenship. Well, if you were Pierre Elliott Trudeau, would you give him citizenship?
Yeah. Exactly.
I'd put him on the slope of back to Germany. You know what I mean? I just put myself, and not that I'm a fan of Pierre Elliott Trudeau, but you got this non-citizen immigrant playing games for the prime minister's office, like making me debate you, and you know I have no right to be here. You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course I wouldn't give him the citizenship, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't care what he says. That's nothing to brag about, Mr. Sundell.
Mm.
Right? As a Canadian, right? But I'm not against him researching whatever he wants or saying whatever he wants. But if he's not a citizen, he does not have a right to be in Canada. Right?
Right.
He should be glad that he's allowed to stay here with his wife and kids. He should keep his nose clean, because you piss him off. And I know I live this every day. I have permanent resident status in the United States of America. I'm married to an American lady, have two American children, and yet I'm not allowed back in the country. And I never done nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Right? And yet he goes around kicking everybody in the shins and wondering why they're mad at him. Right? That said, over the course of his life, and he was acted very poorly against, very wrongfully, by three purportedly profound democracies, and his house was burned, bombed, you know. But a lot of this was brought on by his own doings, in the sense that because what he was doing, he became a magnet for these neo-Nazis, these skinheads, right, to support, which brought a reaction from the Jews anyway out of the gate, because that's why he was being prosecuted, because what he was saying, the giant Zionists were pissed off, right? But then when the neo-Nazis come to his aid, now you piss off ordinary Canadians, and ordinary Canadians don't understand the scene. All they know is that here's these young fellows running around neo-Nazis, and we fought two world wars against Germans, and let's get rid of this guy.
Yep.
And the politicians are going to act in a matter of political will, and hell, he's not even a citizen anyway. Right? So anyway, all that said, he wound up his third marriage to a Yankee woman, and he settles down in Tennessee in 2000. Right?
Right.
And he's a graphic artist and stuff, and he's fairly successful at it, makes a lot of money. And he's married to a Yankee lady now and settled in Tennessee, and he's trying to go through to get his immigration citizenship papers in the States, kind of like, say, what I went through. And I think it was around about 2001, after they had the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
They just come to his house in Tennessee and took him to the Canadian border and said, there you go.
Right.
They didn't want him in the States. They don't have to give you a reason. You have no right to be in another country if you're not a citizen. And just because you married their women or have kids, you still have no rights, right? I know one Canadian. He fought in Vietnam, married, worked 30-some years. He's homeless right here in Fredericton. Went to Vietnam, married, raised kids, wife still married. Drink and driving charge, criminal record. Booted out of the country.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but you're not a citizen of that country. You don't have rights, you understand?
Mm.
And if you have a criminal record, out you go. And if ordinary Canadian drive up to the American border, you can have all your papers in order, and I know it's happened to me any number of times, but border guard just don't like the look of you. He can refuse entry.
Oh, yeah.
You have no right to enter the other country, you know what I mean? So anyway, Zondo thinks he has rights that he does not have. But anyway, what kind of offended me is they took Zondo back to Canada. Well, he's not a Canadian citizen. In fact, he'd left Canada to try to become an American citizen, married an American woman. He's their problem now, right? They bring him back to Canada for some reason to embarrass the Canadians after 9/11.
Yeah.
The Canadians... they spent an incredible amount of money trying him again. And this lawyer that's now dying of cancer, Radical Press's lawyer, right? The guy, Doug Christie. And he's the head of a far right wacko political party in BC. See, that's how I crossed. I've been fighting with Doug Christie for years. I got words. I get emails back between me and all these people, right? So anyway, Doug Christie is his lawyer. And then something, I know I'm being long-winded, but it's kind of interesting because I've got it. Back years ago, the CSIS, which is our Secret Service, they had set up a couple of their moles. One guy was named Grant Brislow. There was a political party coming called the Reform Party under Preston Manning. Stephen Harper is one of his assistants. They were beginning. So the Mulroney government sent CSIS after him. One of the ways he did is they created a mole, a shill, named Grant Brislow. And he hooked up with these neo-Nazis who were supporting Zundel, right? And they created the Canadian Heritage Front, which was right-wing Nazis, right? And Brislow was leader, and he was actually working for the Secret Service, right? And anyway, they were using all of that to impeach this new political party, which was, he even became Preston Manning's bodyguard, the leader of the party. So anyway, once the Reform Party actually got some seats in Parliament and they researched it, they took on the boss of CSIS, Ward Elcock, who's another enemy of mine. Anyway, it all came out years later that CSIS had created this Heritage Front in the first place. And it was all political to impeach this up-and-coming party. You know what I mean? So anyway, all of these people, the remnants of this Heritage Front and these neo-Nazis, because CSIS might create the party, but the followers of it are a bunch of serious wackos. You know what I mean? And they're as bad as the Zionists are bad. You know what I mean? So anyway, here they are. They circle around in certain areas. Birds of a feather flock together. So if you look at Radical Press and you scroll down, you'll get an idea who Mark Lemaire is and Arthur Thompson. Arthur Thompson's being prosecuted. And if you look at my emails, you'll see these people. You'll see Mark Lemaire. You'll see Terry Wilton. You'll see Jennifer Johnson. You'll see a lot of these people in my emails, right? Particularly just Fetzer right now. Because Fetzer is buddies with all of these circles. Now, Fetzer has moved on from like 9/11 issues. And now he's starting to sound like Dina Spingola and Maggie Rodden and Dr. Carley. Now, there's a Jewish problem.
Now, that's one thing I've really noticed in the last sort of 6 to 9 months. Yeah, he's got onto the Jewish-Israel things much more than the ever it was before.
That's what I was trying to tell you last June. I was going like, when I was Dina Spingola last June has Spingola specials.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of shows with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I was talking to you in November, I'm saying, hey, look at this roster, because I just come across it. And other than you and Dr. Judy Wood, everybody else was like the fucking Nazi.
Yep. Yeah.
And I was trying to enlighten you to watch
out. Yeah,
you associate with, right?
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, you're not a Nazi, Judy Wood's not a Nazi, and you don't care about those issues. That's a different, that's, you know what I mean? But you're caught in the
puddle. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And sometimes you are who you associate with, kind of thing. Right?
Yeah.
And anyway, and like, you might say one thing or do something on one show, but then some other show, and there's a host of these internet talk show. There's some more channels than enough now. I discover new ones all the time, right? There's a snowstorm of them. So, and almost every one of these talk show hosts, every one that I've discovered so far, has their own agenda, or they're idiots. Right?
All right.
It's one of the two. Right? So all that said, you have ethical whistleblower in Judy Wood's case. She didn't believe the government, what the government report said. She saw where we'd been lied to and charged for those lies, so she had a KTEM lawsuit because we'd been bamboozled, right? Yep. That makes sense. But good luck winning that one. You know what I mean, right?
Oh, yeah.
But at least she tried. She made the paper trail, right? She did the book. She asked obvious questions. She's a person. She has an interest. She has credibility and the evidence. She has the photographs. You know what I mean? What the hell? And they're not her photographs. She didn't make the photo. She doesn't own the picture, right?
But the picture's not true.
She didn't take them, right? She just take whatever sources she put, muddle it all together, and put her own questions to it, right?
That's right.
But if you type Judy Wood into the internet, you would think she's as nutty as Dave Amos.
Oh, yes. It's a very right? similar to what's happened to you.
Yep. So you get lost in a snowstorm of these bullshit artists, right?
Correct.
So anyway, all that said, why I'm trying to point at British Columbia right now, and the East Coast, which is Werner Bach, right? Mm-hmm. And Harper is prosecuting these people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that Greg Renouf is a spin doctor for Harper. What he's saying about Blakeney and Press TV is coming through, like he's a shill for the feds, you understand?
Mm.
Now, Press TV appears to be financed by the Iranians.
Right.
Al Jazeera, which is run by a former boss of the CBC, is financed out of some country I can't even name, some rich sheik in some country called the Bahrain, right?
Bahrain, so, yeah.
Yeah, so I forget the guy's name, but you must have heard of Al Jazeera, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you have that Russian network, what do they call it, Russian Times or something like that?
Russia Today.
Russia Today?
Oh, yeah.
So, and you'll see a lot of these same people.
Yep, you do, yep, same circuit of people, yep.
So what you're looking is a pull, yin and yang of things, left and right, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then you have a whole other bunch, and you look at who they're attacking. Now you take like, you look at who Greg Renouf is attacking, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you see, holy cow, it's like everything goes full circle. Looks like they're attacking, but then you go around right full circle and you see they're all buddy-buddy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one of the big players in that is, him and all their, so have you ever heard of Tides Foundation?
No.
The Hewlett-Packard Foundation? You've heard of George Soros?
Yes.
Right? Well, they finance things like Democracy Now!, Tides Foundation, which finances David Suzuki, these environmentalist organizations, etc.
Yep.
Far left thing, something like George Soros was behind Occupy Wall
right.
Street. You know what I mean? See, now I'm sure her name, you're right. And CCR, Center for Constitutional Responsibility. And then you have the other side. You have like the Koch brothers. You probably heard of them, right?
Koch brothers, not that I recall.
Oh, they're huge. They're huge. That's like Heritage Foundation, Cato Institute, da-da-da-da-da, right? Then you have another bunch, like the Rockefeller Foundation, that finance, like, they would think they're environmentalists when really they're oil barons. You know, it's all very confusing, right?
Mm.
But it seems like they create the dispute. It's like, how would you put it? Like watching a football game.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the guy that runs studio or the arena or Roman Coliseum. You can root for this guy or you can root for that guy, as long as I make all the money.
Yep.
Right? The crowd goes to watch the show, right? I create the show, right? So it's like watching professional wrestlers. Like, they go out and they beat themselves up, or looks like it, and then you see them having a drink afterwards, best of buddies.
Someone I know described it as reality TV for aliens. In other words, the aliens are setting all this up so that they can sit back and laugh at this TV show that they've, you know, created.
Well, it's a huge joke on us all.
Right.
Huh? So, I'm going, like, either the whole world's crazy or I'm crazy. One of the two, right? But there's too many of them, and they keep contradicting each other. And like, I keep harping on the same thing. Like, there's only so many things I've done. You know what I mean? I sued a bunch of people. I blew the whistle, sued a bunch of people, run for public office, caused some hearings, and been stuck in the woods and mad as hell for years. Like, my story's the same. It ain't changed. I mean, I can't add to it other than maybe I'll run into somebody new every now and then, right? Or stick my nose in another. But my issues are still the same as they've always been, right? Now, Fetzer, on the other hand, will one minute's JFK, another minute's Wellstone, then one 9/11, you know what I mean? Like Zionist, you know what I mean? He bounces here, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And am I the only one that sees this? I can't be, right? And then you look, and I go, okay, who is this Spencer? What has he actually done? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Has he sued anybody? No.
Oh.
Has he run for public office? No. Mm-hmm. He's a Marine and a professor, right? He's got enough shows. Like, he said he had, like, shows 5 days a week on RBN. And, like, all he does is yap.
Correct.
You know what I mean? And I'm going, okay, I want to have some fun. Okay? Because I had this email exchange with Fetzer. I have this email exchange with Bob Carey's assistant, the 9/11 Commission.
Right.
Right? Well, I sent that to you. I don't know if you ever read the letter that I wrote to the 9/11 Commission.
I read some of
that email I sent. That's the red letter I wrote to the 9/11 Commission.
Mm.
You can see John Kerry's assistant, Bob Carey's assistant, recognized.
Right.
You can see where, when Debbie Fisher decided to run against Bob Carey in the last election, when he decided to go back into the Senate, she kicked his ass. You can see me saying hi to both of them before the election. You know what I mean?
Mm.
I'm saying, say hi to Obama for me. I didn't even know Bob Carey was in the election. Someone running for senator, Fisher, subscribed to my Twitter account. I'm going, I don't have that many subscribers. I'm wondering why this person subscribed to me in Nebraska or whatever. And she's running for Senate. I'm flattered. I never heard of her. Right? And I said, geez, I wonder who she's running again. Right? But I remember listening to the first conversation I had with you in 2009, and we went from swine flu to 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
And I was bitching then about a lawyer named Farmer, who had been one of the lawyers in the 9/11 Commission, and he'd written a book in 2009 saying how the 9/11 Commission didn't do his job. Well, he's the one that did it. He's one of the lawyers I talked to. Right? And
if
you look at that letter, I said, to his boss! And I was so pissed I couldn't get through to anyone. Oh, you can't talk to these people, right? I said, well, we can work one way to skin a cat. So, Bob Carey, he was the president of that university down in Greenwich Village, and he was one of the 9/11 commissioners, right?
Yeah.
So I couldn't get through to them by way of the lawyers of the 9/11 commission. And I wanted to talk to Carey to get him to ask some questions to Mueller, who was the boss of the FBI. Now, you can consider the date. Look at the date when that letter was. When was that letter? Do you see it there?
I'm just away from the computer at the minute. I've got to go to bed soon as well because it's nearly 11:30 now. I've got to get up tomorrow morning.
Anyway, okay, I'll be quick.
Mm-hmm.
The 9/11 Commission was in the spring of 2004.
Okay? Right. Mm-hmm.
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
So that's when this went down. This was when I first met Barry Bacharach. I'm going to check the date of this email, this letter, just so I'm not lying to you. Are you recording this call?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Good. All right. April 14th. That's when Mueller was going to testify. And I said, I'll be listening closely to Mr. Mueller. April 14th, 2004. I'm addressing. Mm-hmm. For the 9/11 Commission and Kerry Singh. And the general counsel of the 9/11 Commission was named Daniel Marcus, right? And there's the letter. Right?
Yeah. You seem to have disappeared.
You there? Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I know you got to go to bed, but just as I said that lawyer's name, like...
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah.
Everything was ski-whiff.
Weird.
But it said I was still connected and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the email speaks for itself, right? And the emails to Fetzer speak for themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. And anybody takes time to read them, I speak in simple English. Right? But I most definitely did do business with some of the players in the 9/11 Commission.
Yeah.
And I've told you before, and since this is recorded, or hopefully.
Yeah, it's recording. Last time I rang, I thought it was recording, and it hadn't been recorded or crashed out, but yeah, this is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but anyway, that said, not too long afterwards is when the entire 9/11 Commission had to go see George Bush in the Oval Office while Dick Cheney held his hand and they talked about 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Bob Kerry and Lee Hamilton left the Oval Office early. You're having a meeting with the president and the vice president about 9/11, and you're a 9/11 commissioner and the chair, Lee Hamilton was. You leave the Oval Office early. They went to the airport in Washington, and they greeted Paul Martin, the prime minister of Canada.
Yeah.
Bush wouldn't talk to Paul Martin. Snubbed him the whole time he was president. Right?
Right.
But Lee Hamilton and Bob Kerry greeted Paul Martin, Prime Minister of Canada, and they went to the, I think they called it the Woodrow Wilson Institute, right? Where he was doing a big speech down there. Bush wanted nothing to do with it. Now, correlate that with emails that are, I think you see some of them on the internet. I'm sending Paul Martin because he just became Prime Minister.
Mm.
Right? Because Kretchaz stepped down and he went through a leadership thing just like Bundle did. Right?
Mm.
And I sent everybody documents where I was acknowledged from the Department of Homeland Security Inspector General with the plate number.
Mm.
Then the Deputy Minister of Canada acknowledged receiving all the stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Right?
Mm.
I'm sending all of this to the 11 Commission. Right?
Uh-huh.
I'm talking to Bob Kerry's office in the Greenwich Village, you know, right?
Right.
And when I saw go meet the Prime Minister, I wondered if my name come up. I certainly asked, right? So if anybody did anything about 9/11 as early as anybody could that I know of, I'm one of them.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And I don't care what Fetzer or anybody says, you're looking at the proof because you can see where Bob Kerry's lady friend answered me. And you can even see where I even said her stuff about Byron Pryor and me telling off a newfie cop and talking about the FBI and Whitey Bulger. You could see that in an email that she acknowledged receiving, going, that's enough, David, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I sent her many more emails. You're just looking at that one, but I sent her documentation.
Right.
And anyway, she and I got the huge spit in June. She pissed me off.
Yeah.
Right? And then she apologized because she had included a bunch of other professors in the college in our email exchange.
Right.
And then when I took her down the rabbit hole, she shut me down, but it was too late. They already got it. And she's apologizing to all the other people that got the same thing, right?
Right.
It's too funny. But it nevertheless happened, right? And whatever Fetzer says or does, do with those two emails what you will, Andrew.
Right.
You're in the BCC line, so nobody knows you got them, right? But you can see all the players that I was talking about earlier in that long spout that I was given, West and Radical Press and stuff like that. Got it. Now, I was baiting them on Friday night. I sent them three. I got no response. They got two more.
Yeah. Right?
And now I'm going to write the hell of a letter to Spitzer. Now, the reason I wanted to talk to you is it okay if I mention your name and Dr. Judy Wood's name?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're public with all this. I mean, I'm public with our associations with people like Fetzer and some of these other people we've mentioned, you know. It's all
public. I've never drawn you into my affairs.
No, no, but I mean, if you're merely mentioning my name and something, you know, that we've, I mean, what our conversations are also essentially public. I mean, I haven't sort of, you know, trumpeted them on my website, but
for your benefit, you know, you're a married man with kids, right?
Oh yeah, but I mean, as I've said to other people, that they can come and take me out anytime they like. You know, I don't take any steps to protect myself. I understand what you're saying. Don't get me wrong, but
I've always kept you and me private, and I always put you in the BCC lines. I kept you informed, but I never said you and I were friends.
Sure, no, I agree, and I don't know what you're saying, but I think if people wanted to discover that information, it's essentially public, although it's not that public, if you see what I mean. You know, I mean, you know, you've sent links to my website at least, haven't you, already, with those PDF files and stuff like that? So
yeah. Yeah,
you know,
but other people grab my stuff and put them in their files.
Right, right, okay. No, you mentioned my name if you want to, because these people have to ignore me and they have to ignore us because it's too dangerous for them to not ignore us. Well, to not ignore me. I don't know about you, but it seems to be pretty dangerous for them to acknowledge you, and I think it's dangerous for them to acknowledge me. So I don't really see any danger myself. I mean, I could be wrong, but as things stand currently, I don't see any danger.
The point is that I wouldn't do it behind your back.
No.
Not, you know what I mean? Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard Fetzer talking all over the airways, putting a friend of mine down.
Right.
I'm going to kick the bastard in the nuts because it suits me. You understand?
Yeah, I understand. All right.
And I don't have to justify my actions. I already have. If you read my letter to Spencer 2005, I say the only reason you contacted me is because you've discovered me in the blog. You ignored what we talked about in January.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I could just see him trying to climb on my coattails when he called me in March.
Right, but he needed. He also needed to know what you knew, so that he could, you know, pass that information around to the right people.
Well, if you look at the email, he tried to get me to talk to Michael Rupert. Do you know who Michael Rupert is?
Oh yeah, of course I do know who he is. Yeah,
right. You know what I mean?
That is interesting. I didn't know that Fetzer had directed you to him, because I don't think I'd read that far in your message or in his response. But yeah, that is interesting.
Well, just read his email. And he says, I'm going, take your fucking suggestion. You know what I mean? Like, read my email. And then he said, send your... He had some guy that writes books. The guy was calling him Lead Instigator. And some guy in New York publishes books.
All right.
He said, oh, you should do your story. There's this guy. It's in the email. He said, he gave me the guy's name, phone number, right?
Right.
He kept fucking lying to me on the phone, and I ain't got time for this, you know? Like, I was trying to save the house and stay out of jail, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I go, well, don't you remember we talked? I sent you emails. What is it you didn't understand? Well, I forget. And he's laughing. And he's got this sick laugh, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going, none of this is funny, buddy. Right? And I hung up on him. And I didn't consider him important because he's not law enforcement. He's not a politician. He's just this asshole professor that wrote a book. That's all he is about. Right?
Yeah.
And then he comes back with this snide email about getting my story out. I'm going, it's not a fucking story. You know what I mean? Right? You know
what
I'm going to try to make money off selling this thing. Right? Just out of jail, you asshole. You know what I mean, right? But anyway, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, he told me to, you know, Michael Rupert could get it out. I already knew who Michael Rupert was, and this other guy. And I said, all right. So I sent Rupert and that other guy what I knew about the media. And Barack Obama, right there in the email, what I said about Barack Obama in 2004 before he was elected senator. It's right there in the email.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Fetzer brags here in his talk shows just recently that he had given Barack Obama $500 to, you know, be elected president. Hell, right? Well, if Fetzer had read what I said about Obama in 2004 before he was the U.S. senator, then you'd understand how pissed I am.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he acknowledged those emails.
Yep.
He even sent them back. And I suckered him, if you look, when I sent him the last one, he so pissed me off that I included his two friends, four of my friends, each one of them has my durable power of attorney, the BBC, the RCMP, two local reporters in Boston, and a bunch of politicians right around our house that I was mad at and dealing with in court.
Yeah.
He responded, goes, egad, David. What is he, British now? Says, egad, David, right? And then he gives kind of like a snide, half-assed apology.
Oh, yeah.
It's insincere. And I just laughed because I didn't care about him. He had sent the entire email, which was hell in a handbasket, to the BBC, the RCMP, a Crown prosecutor, and some reporters, right?
Yeah. I saw you write that in the message back, yeah, to him.
And I said, I just laughed and dismissed him. And I never thought about him again, Andrew, until you mentioned him in early 2010.
Right.
But that's, and then anyway, when I see him hooked up with these guys out west, and I listened to these shows, and I heard you mentioned and everything, I decided I'd have a little fun with them on Friday night, so I let you know.
And
then the only time I've seen him talk, you know, on weekends, getting late. And,
well, there's another guy, actually, I forgot to mention it earlier on, but there's a guy that's come onto the radar screen recently called Pete Santilli, and he's been doing big features on Judy Wood on his program for several weeks, and why I mentioned him was he did an expose on Fetzer, and he did a program with him, and Fetzer, he got Fetzer to, you know, effing and blinding on air, saying, fuck this, fuck that, you know, and this was on air, so he completely got Fetzer to expose himself to anybody that was listening to it properly.
You got a link to that, so I'll listen to it.
Yeah, I'll send it before we go off, and it's, I think there's a download for it. I'm pretty sure there is. Yeah, there must be. And he would probably be a good guy to have you on, I think. Santilli was a whistleblower against Coca-Cola, and he got a settlement out of them a few years back, quite a big settlement. So I think he's got a few, I think he's basically living off that settlement, I think, because he did a whistleblower case and he won, unusually enough.
I'm building a Fetzer file for my own benefit.
Yeah, uh-huh. But, you'll probably enjoy listening to this, because basically what Santilli did was he was coming at it from the Judy Wood angle specifically, and he wanted to get, because Fetzer has had this big ongoing campaign to pretend to support Judy Wood's book. He had to do that because he had Judy Wood on many times in 2006.
15 times, and he allowed her to speak for 3 hours at a...
Right, right. You've probably heard him say it himself. And so basically, he did this book review on Amazon, Fetzer did. And let's see if I can find that right one. Was it gone?
Well, you're looking, a lot of these shows are raw shows. So, like, when they go to commercial, then they'll talk while the commercial's on, him and the host, right?
That's right.
And it's kind of funny listening to him talk, because you listen to his perfect manners when he's on the air, and then you hear him swearing like a trooper when they're talking off air.
Yeah, this is what happened with this one, because his recording is his own recording of the backstream, I think he calls it.
Yeah.
Have you got the other person to watch out for in your travels, if you haven't already come across him, is Gordon Duff.
Gordon Duff.
He runs that Veterans Today website with Fetzer.
Yes.
And yes. He's ex-CIA. I think he openly admits he's ex-CIA. He's a very slimy character. And Santilli did an expose on him. He actually secretly recorded a phone call with him. And it's what Gordon Duff says is very interesting. You can tell he's switching between bullshit and real information. You know, if you listen carefully enough.
I think I already crossed paths with him. Veterans Day or whatever, what's his face? J.B. Campbell used to write for him? Do you know who he is?
Well, no, I don't know that name, but...
Well, that guy is, like, dangerous.
Is he? I've not heard of him.
Oh, the last, before I let you go. Remember I was talking about this dangerous little kid that was too articulate and Spingola and Dr. Carly and everybody involved.
What's his name? Zionist Crime or something.
Zion Crime Factory, yeah.
That's him.
Well, there's been a dissension in the ranks there. The guy that, Mike Delaney, that was running his websites and his server, right? They got a big spit and chew. And then there's another guy that Spencer speaks to all the time, John Friend. And these, anyway, all these neo-Nazi white supremacist guys, they all got in a fight with each other. So Zion Crime Factory is booted out. So that was the first email I sent Fetzer and his friends, teasing
right.
about this little guy in Canada. So anyway, this Zion Crime Factory, once his friends got on the opposite side of him, they start saying his name and publishing his picture. Like, evil is evil unto itself kind of thing. It's too funny.
Right. There we go. I found that link now. Yeah, so I think you have a listen to the Santilli guy, see what you think of him. And he might be a good guy to have you on, possibly.
Yeah.
I think he would probably get a lot out of your information, actually.
How did you send it? Skype?
Yeah, I'll do you want it email or just Skype, okay? It's just...
I don't see it. When I click on Skype,
you need the little chat bubble thing. You click on, because you can just see my picture probably, and then there's a little chat bubble just to the bottom left of my picture. You click on that and it brings back that.
I see it now.
Very obscure. I have endless trouble with people who are novices, you know, and they don't know where to look.
I haven't used, like, this new Skype.
Yeah, they've updated it as well, so, yeah.
But anyway, I'll let you go because it's getting late, but...
I'm gonna go.
You have a look at the email, and thanks for the permission to mention your name. I got this letter half-assed composed. I'll go back. I'll probably send it probably tomorrow or the next day.
Alrighty.
I'm just sort of, I'm trying to get a rise out of Fetzer, and I think he's smart enough to try to ignore me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm sending it
probably
to all his friends. So this one I sent today might get a rise out of him. I don't know.
Alrighty. Well, thanks for calling, and I'll post these files. I'll put the two, because when it, you know, when the call cut off, it switches to another recording, but I'll lump them together and I'll put it on my website probably tomorrow morning sometime. So.
Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to. I didn't want to do anything behind your back. I just wanted you
to
know.
No, that's fine. Yeah. All right, then, Dave.
Take care.
Yeah.
Say that I have wifey and kids.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, bye now.
Cheers for now.